everybody. I'm starting early. This is Again With This, episode 41. Let's watch Luke Perry in his debut episode of What I Like About You. And there's an exclamation point, so everybody get excited. Woo! And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hey, Sarah.
Didn't Dave order the extra shot? Hello.
Hello to you Patreons as well. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for joining us today. We are talking about What I Like About You, specifically the first episode with Luke Perry. What I Like About You is a sitcom. It ran on the WB for 4 seasons, longer than I remembered, frankly.
Yeah, same.
From 2002 to 2006. The premise of the series is that Val and Holly, who are played by Jenny Garth and Amanda Bynes, are sisters. Their dad gets transferred to Japan, so Holly goes to live with Val in New York. Val is uptight, and Holly is a teen, so clashes ensue. Val also runs a bakery with her friends, which is called Sugar Babies. Did you note that? No one knew what that meant. Guys,
I guess they thought, they're like, you know, like the candy, like, and still.
Yeah. So one person who probably did know what Sugar Babies means was co-creator Dan Schneider. He is a creator of several sitcoms, someone who had worked with Bynes a lot. He is no longer working now due to allegations of abusive behavior on set. And given that several of his female stars, including Bynes, have gone through pretty serious mental breakdowns later in life, there has been speculation about exactly what forms that abuse took beyond that he was a yeller. Of course, we cannot speak to that, but we will link an article in the show notes about Nickelodeon cutting ties with him in 2018.
Oh, yeah. God.
Yeah. Schneider's co-creator on this series is Will Calhoun with one L. As far as I know, he is not disgraced. He was a producer on Friends, but more recently a co-EP for a season on Grace and Frankie. So this episode, season 3, episode 17, is called Dangerous Liaisons. It aired February 25th, 2005. Were we literally ever so young?
I mean, just their phones. I'm like, oh, man.
I know. Oh, my God. That's really, more than anything else, dates it. Mm-hmm. So it's co-written by Scott Weinger, voice of Aladdin in the animated movie. Also Steve in Full House, DJ's boyfriend, later husband, I think. Maybe. Not sure. Didn't watch that show. I never knew he was a writer. Good for him. Peter Dirksen did a lot of kid comms after this, but is now a co-EP on the Goldbergs. So they recap it kind of a lot in this episode, but Holly had been dating a kid named Ben, or a guy, but they broke up 2 episodes before this because she was interested in a guy named Vince, who is not in this one. He's played by Nick Zano. But then she found out her friend Tina, played by Allison Munn, who I think I may have met in real life. She's friends with our friend Pam. She slept with Vince, so Tina and Holly are on the outs. Mm-hmm. And this episode kind of only has the one plot line, so let's go through it, starting from our cold open. Clip 1.
Okay, so I have an extra ticket to see Ashley Simpson tonight at the Garden.
An extra ticket to see Ashley Simpson. Guys.
Ashley Simpson. At the Garden.
I mean, even if I hadn't already said what year this aired, a ticket to see Ashley Simpson, you'd go, oh, right, okay, it's 2005.
And that line almost went past me because I was busy making a note about the fact that everybody's jeans rise averages like 4 inches.
So low.
I am so glad that era is over. Thank God.
I mean, I'm glad I don't have to wear them anymore, but Amanda Bynes, she looks good in them.
Yeah, she does. It was a good look for some people.
For some.
I was not that people.
No, me neither. Also, I mean, Sarah also said, Holly's phone, tiny. It might be a BlackBerry Pearl.
The teeny little Nokia.
Yeah, yeah.
That just was like the size of a matchbook, basically. Oh, those are so cute. I used to text on those like an animal.
Oh, my God. Yeah. We also see Jenny Garth in this scene, of course. Her hair extensions, so plentiful, also really situates us in time.
Gorgeous, lush, plenty.
Yeah.
They look really heavy, but they're, I mean, they're pretty good. They just look heavy because we're used to seeing, like, she doesn't have thick hair. She just doesn't.
So. No, she's a real blonde, so she has, like, baby hair. We also see a long Empire waist top. Because again, 2005, on Lauren, Val's co-owner at the bakery, played by the always wonderful Leslie Grossman, a queen. So happy to see her. I'd forgotten that she was even in the show when I picked it and was like, oh yeah, what a pleasant surprise.
Apparently Simon Rex was also in the show and does not appear as far as I know.
Mm-mm.
Because now we've stopped trying to make that happen, I guess.
Yeah. So speaking of Holly's phone, the runner through the episode is that she has deleted Tina's contact, which is the most permanent way she knows to just obliterate a person from her life. And this is, of course, before the cloud. So Val tries to get Holly to stop being ridiculous and end this feud. But Holly reminds Val of the values she drilled into Holly. Clip two.
Look, I get that you're hurt. I do. But don't you think you're just being a little bit harsh? I hate her. And since when did you think that loveless sex and one-night stands are okay? I mean, when I was 10, you told me that having sex without love can make a girl's ear fall off.
Oh. It's Lauren checking her ears.
So, have you changed your mind?
No.
So you're on my side?
Of course I am.
Okay, well, good, because my friends are dropping like flies.
Someone call about
Enter Luke Perry.
Yeah, it's right off.
Holy crap. Oh my God, what? Did you see that guy just came in? Yeah, what the hell do you think this drool is? Oh my God, oh my God. Todd, you know that beautiful man? Val Tyler, did you lose an ear to that man? Okay, wait, just so we're clear. We're using losing an ear as a metaphor for having sex with, right? Shut up! No! You shut up! It was one night, okay? And I just want to forget that it ever happened.
One night?
As in one night stand, you dirty bird.
Yeah, this pipe's gonna burst. I might need a hand down here.
Hey, Val, is that the same line I used on you?
This is fairly corny multicam writing, but these are not terrible jokes, I thought.
Did you lose an ear to that man? Was good. Generally, Leslie Grossman is, with one exception, the best thing about this episode. And I'm glad she gets enough to do. But, Jenny Garth has no appreciable sense of humor, and it is extremely strange to me that her work after 90210 was sitcoms mostly. I know that she's like the straight man, but it still is like, I mean, this is everything that I hate about sitcoms, from the look of it to the writing to the pauses so that everybody knows where to laugh. Like, I just don't, this is not for me, but it, for what it is, it does do some things well. And, there are some clever callbacks in here. And they know what they have.
Yeah.
I think this show knows what it is and who is in it.
Yeah.
Which is good. It's not for me, but it's good at what it is.
I agree.
I guess.
I think you're right, because I agree about Jenny Garth's lack of a sense of humor, but the fact that she's playing the boring stick in the mud, I think is, that's the play.
Yeah.
For her.
Yeah. You can't flip her and Grossman. No.
Oh, no. So that takes us into the theme song, which is somehow not what I like about you. That's not the theme song. Like, what? Weird.
Maybe the romantics were like, we do not like money enough to let you use that, which is weird to me, but all right.
Sure. But anyway, Jenny Garth gets the and credits, so good for her and her agent for negotiating that, I guess.
Yep. The Locklear.
Mm-hmm. So then we go to Val and Holly's extremely unrealistic New York apartment. Mm-hmm. Like, there are stairs. But
yeah, there are daises.
Sure. Holly has summoned her friend Gary, played by Wesley Jonathan, but she can smell Tina on him, literally. She issues an ultimatum, and when he chooses Tina under duress, she deletes his contact as well. Back to the bakery, where Todd thinks he recognizes Val. Clip three.
My thinking. There's no way you'd be able to forget this smile. These eyebrows.
He waggles them. This is where we start to see how winky it's actually going to be, where he, like, he does them, like, waggles them up and down. It's like, okay, all right, yeah. Okay. So Lauren steers Todd toward remembering that he knew Val in high school. Clip four.
She had the locker right next to mine. She always looked kind of troubled. I like that. But you know what? I was going out with Brenda, and Val was seeing this guy, Rick. There was this one night.
Oh, wait.
Oh. And that's on a cold day.
That's Lauren holds his tape measure to keep him from walking away. that's on a cold day, and she flips out.
Yeah.
It took until he said, I was dating Brenda and Val. I was like, oh, my God, Jenny Garth is playing Val. I didn't even put it together.
Yeah.
But that's funny.
I love that Reek made an appearance.
Right.
Perfect.
Well, we'll get to it. So it doesn't take much for Lauren to get Todd to tell the story, which we see in a flashback. And if you didn't watch the episode, he is in a tall wig with sideburns.
Oh, my God. Dog boy to the max. I love it.
Yes. Obviously supposed to evoke Dylan. May actually be a Wolverine Halloween costume wig.
It may actually be. Excellent call.
It's like tall, but also like wide.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she is in the black and white dress that both Kelly and Brenda wore to the spring dance. And we hear, let's hear it. Clip five.
Hey, Tyler. Rough spring fling?
Todd, I didn't know you were back in school. How was jail?
Just community service. They had me reading to the blind. They were cool. So, hey, Brandon. How you doing?
Oh, I'm not good. Rick just broke up with me. Right in the middle of Ice Baby. Said he didn't want a commitment.
Now that is whack. If it makes you feel any better, Brenda called me from Paris this morning. She wants to take a break.
Oh, that is whack also. Sorry.
You know, you look different with Brenda out of town.
I think maybe I should go.
You want to go get something to eat?
Oh, no. I don't eat after 8 o'clock.
What do you do after 8 o'clock?
Homework. Sometimes board games.
Ever play Risk? You know, I don't have too many more of these, so, are we going to make the magic or not?
We are not.
My loss.
Oh, did I hurt your feelings? I'm sorry.
It's okay. Everyone does. I'm gonna go.
No, don't go. I mean, you're so tormented. No one understands you. You're empty inside. Your heart hurts, doesn't it?
Well,
shut up, Todd.
He kiss. I'm not mad at it, guys.
No, I'm not either.
The thing about, well, we'll get to it. So that Holly hears the end of the story, Val flips out. So then after the commercial, Holly confronts Val about not living her values or whatever. She figures out the night this happened was also Holly's stand-up debut at a club called Giggles. Clip six.
So that's why you blew off your little 10-year-old sister stand-up? Because you were with the plumber?
I wasn't a plumber back then. I had hopes.
Plumbers make bank, guys.
Yeah,
what the
they
fuck?
Do. Like, seriously. Hopes were to be a poet, you did the right thing.
Right. Plumber is a stable job. Trust me, I know that now more than I ever did before. Thank you, Texas Freeze. Anyway, So then we also got Holly's flashback of her night at Giggles, and it's really wee Amanda Bynes doing stand-up at age 10, and she's not bad. Like, she's 10, but she's clearly meant to be a performer. She's pretty good.
Yeah.
And the rest is kind of dumb. We careen toward the getting back to one, you know, sitcom resolution of the fight between Holly and Tina. Gary and Lauren stage kissing scene, so Holly's forced to realize she needs people in her phone so she has someone to gossip with. Honestly, true and relatable.
Yep. Like, absolutely a solid plan. There is some ebony ivory word play.
Yeah.
That is not what would happen now, one hopes.
Nope.
Then again, the United States of L appears to be proceeding on a network. So maybe it would happen. I hope not.
Yes.
It's bad. There's also a newsie cap that I'm going to have to find and bury by a full moon because it's horrible.
Yeah. It's almost worth watching the episode for that hat alone because it's like denim and it has a pocket. Like, it's a Levi's newsboy cap. It's really unacceptable.
With the back pocket on the top of the head. Like, nope.
Mm-mm.
Awful.
Anyway, Holly and Tina reconcile. Todd the plumber asks Val out, and she accepts after an earth-shaking kiss. Clip 7.
I'm guessing Brenda's still in Paris?
Like, and Luke Perry's in two more episodes that we may also get to eventually on this Patreon. Who knows? Like, this is how you do it. You know, this is what fans want when you get someone from your old show on your new show. Do this. This kind of goofiness, this is what the fans want. And I really admire the show for being like, let's fucking go for broke. And I also admire Jenny Garth and Luke Perry for being like, yeah, this would be fun because they seem like they're having it.
Yeah, I think Jenny Garth may not have really understood what they were trying to do, but she understands that acting is a job and she shows up and does the job.
Mm-hmm.
So like Luke Perry, I would give far more credit in terms of like really plugging into like, this is why I'm famous and this is the fan service that needs to happen because it's just acting and we're none of us 23 years old and thinking that we're going to be Brando anymore. And almost all the projects that I've seen him in after the 90s were this. And come to think of it, even though he was phoning it in on a very bad connection for a lot of the latter seasons of 90210, like, I think he sort of, that was when he sort of understood his place in the firmament.
Yeah.
And once he embraced it, then I think he really became a star because he was just like, you know, that this is what I am and this is what people want. And he does appear to have a sense of humor. Like, I liked his Hallmark movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny that
he could make fun of himself. Like, I don't think there was too much further they could have pushed that with Jenny Garth. But
yeah,
that he had that wig on and like communicated feeling himself.
Yeah.
It was amazing. He's good. I miss him. I miss him every day.
I do too. Yeah. I think everyone, it's funny that Leonard Nimoy's autobiographies were called I Am Not Spock and I Am Spock. Cause I feel like everyone on a long running show has to go through that where it's like you reject it and then you're like, you know what? Fuck it. Like, you just have to understand your fans. You know, a certain segment of your fans are just going to only want one thing from you. And other fans are going to follow you to other stuff. And like, it's fine to service both of those constituencies. And it doesn't serve you to be mad about the people that still want to love you for the first thing they loved you in.
Yeah, it's true.
So this was fun. I'm glad you're not mad at having to watch it.
I mean, there's really only 12 minutes of material here, but that's like so many sitcoms. I mean, I have some critiques, but who cares? It's off the air and people seem to like it and good for them.
Yeah. So we'll link it in the show notes. It's on HBO Max if you want to check it out.
Hello, Dave and Dave's balls.
Well, I might just leave that in and just let them figure out what might that reference be about. They'll never know. It's kind of funny.
They won't.
Oh. Have fun.
This is Again With Again With This, episode 61. Let's watch Shando in Friends till the end. And now, here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
So stanky. Hello, Again With This Patreons. Thank you so much for your support. It's because of you that we're able to revisit auxiliary Starverse gems of a bygone age, like the one we're talking about today. Hello, Tara. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Hello, 1997. We are digging into iconic TV movie Friends Till the End. There's a link in our show notes. If you haven't seen it yet, this particular rip isn't the highest quality, but it will get the job done.
The description on YouTube mistakenly says 2016 because there was a remake later on Lifetime, and this one, I was worried when I fired it up, but it's the original.
Fear not. You will see square tank tops immediately, and you will know, you will feel safe in the bosom of the 90s. In the event that you are not already familiar with this property, the story is one of Joseph Campbell's mythic archetypes, JK, but from how often this seemed to headline pop culture in the early to mid-90s, you might think that it was. I am speaking of the single white female trope as seen in various iterations, the movie by the same name, of course, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, which is the baby lust variation, the Tara Street Child arc on Bev Niner, obviously, which aired in May sweeps of 96, and this from January of 1997. Speculation as to why American filmed output was quite this concerned about positioning women struggling with emotional illness as a profoundly terrifying here be monsters point on the Madonna horror axis? Well, no need to speculate, really. It's just yet another spasm of American misogynistic backlash against the childless, the socially awkward, and the non-traditional. For white hats, I should specify, Friends Till the End is functionally ignorant of the existence of people of color or queer sensibilities, although there's more than a little anxiety in it about, and imagine I'm capitalizing this word like a Mary McCarthy novel from the 1930s, lesbianism.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we were culturally when this aired. Let me now locate you with the plot. We open on a kid's talent pageant. Where are you going? Backstage, little Suzanne is getting toxically hectored by her mom, played by the great Harriet Sansom Harris. We'll get back to that. Little Heather is warmly encouraged by her mom and in turn is sweetly supportive when Suzanne is super nervous and compulsive about the performance order, which is probably for no reason, right? Wrong. When it's time to sing, Suzanne flames out spectacularly on Beautiful Dreamer. We get it. Cut to college. College Heather, played by Shando, is winning a college pageant, costumed, not for nothing, in a figure-hugging red satin job that is a banger, but is not necessarily on brand for a sorority rush chair.
Mm-mm.
I don't know how you felt about that, Tara.
No, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Heather has it all. Sorority friends, including the criminally underused Nicole Bilderbach of Bring It On as Paige. Flawlessly shiny long bob with bangs, admission to an overbooked short story class taught by Harry Lennox for some reason, and the lead singer spot in a band. Ugh, this band, Jesus. Okay, it also features her boyfriend, who is such a drip that I've already forgotten the character's name, but he's played by Jason London. That is the Dazed and Confused London, by the way, not the Seventh Heaven one, who was once arrested for, quote, vandalizing a cell phone. Girls by Club never forgets.
His name is Simon.
Thank you. And the things I draw come true. Anywho, London primarily distinguishes himself here by A, looking hunted, and B, wearing absolutely gargantuan clothing, even for the 90s. Like,
yeah.
He seriously looks like the shrunken head denizens of the waiting room in Dave, Beetlejuice. One of his long-sleeved shirts goes down to mid-thigh. I'm not even kidding. Somewhere, David Silver is like, my dude, that is too big. I mean, it just reminds me of that entire entry I did on previously.tv that time about Noel Crane's sweater that Dave just kept visiting it and being like, is this real? Is this a child's robot costume made from a box? Oh, God, this is how we lived. Also worth noting about this band, Cliff Dorfman, Kelly's rapist, isn't it? And the band's name is Dead Pink, which is really terrible, but maybe a play on London's character's name in Dazed and Confused. Given that Shando is playing another Heather, I don't think this is a coincidence. Mm-hmm. It may also be a creeper reference to Le Petit Mort or Murdered Girls. Who knows? I do know this. As Dead Pink prepares for a climactic battle of the bands, Suzanne, now known as Zan, played by Jennifer Blanc with Paige Mossy and Gusto, has pity partied her way into Heather's sorority with a sob story about her dead parents, allegedly, fangirled her way into a backup vocals gig in Dead Pink, and is preparing to burn Heather's life down from the inside. Along the way, though, we spend a lot of time listening to this band, watching the band's entire extremely 1990s video, which you will be shocked to learn involves a British phone booth in the middle of the desert and no brassieres, and marveling at Shando's utter unwillingness and or inability to pronounce the word anymore any other way than her trademark, bless her heart, even in song, clip two. Despite being terrible, this song is an earwig. I have been singing it all day. I'm not happy about it. Anyway, Zan, or as Shando would probably call her, Zin, is determined to avenge herself for her childhood loss to Heather in that pageant, and nothing can get in her way. Not a guy who recognizes her from her previous life, who ends up taking a fatal brick to the noggin in an alley. Not drippy London's birthday, which Zan leverages by stealing Heather's dress and keys, meeting drippy London at a fancy restaurant and boning him with little resistance, then smugly letting Heather catch them in bed together. Not Heather's other friendships, which Zan tries to sunder in an actually kind of realistic way when she saves her ammo for a game of I Never, clip three.
I never made out with a teacher.
I never thought I was pregnant.
That was Bilderbeck at the end there. And man, again, what a shame. Really needed more of her.
Also, Allison, it's worth noting, is played by Marisol Nichols, currently of Riverdale. But on 90210, she was Ray's wife when he comes back.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Man, this really is a reunion. This was a little on the nose in execution. It was supposed to be a secret, but it's all part of like Zan's larger plan to drive a wedge by making Heather seem like a selfish bitch. This happens. She catches Zan and the drippy in the sack together, and Heather is now in full Brenda Stomp mode. Clip four.
Life?
You saved my life.
Right. I owe you everything. I would never hurt you over some guy.
While Fortunato enjoys his. When he buries Fortunato, he buries his
just
own.
Just give me one more chance. All I ever wanted was for you to like me.
Then you're sunk, Xan. Because there is no way in hell I will ever like anything about you.
Last sounds are the jingles of his bells.
You're sunk? Okay. Scarlet Pimpernel. Yeah. This is another example of Friends Till the End being a lot cleverer about its internal references than about how it's structured itself. The girls are in the Harry Lennox class, and in the background, you can hear him teaching Pose the Cask of Amontillado, which, as you may know, is about a guy burying a former friend alive as vengeance. Do you get it? Are you sure? I can go over it again. Okay, great. So here's where we find out that earlier in the film, the writing assignment Xan found that Heather, quote, lost for the Harry Lennox class. Xan finding it saved Heather's butt and ingratiated her with Heather, but that was actually Xan's insurance policy. Xan switched Heather's story out for something else, and when Heather turns on her, Xan goes to Harry Lennox to accuse Heather of plagiarizing it from Joyce Carol Oates. Another extremely interesting choice, given Oates' usual takes on women's agency in lead characters, but also, hey, Harry Lennox.
Yeah.
If it's a straight rip of Joyce Carol Oates, who you teach, shouldn't you have caught that shit before?
Seriously.
It's not exactly undistinctive prose. Mm-hmm. Is that just me?
No, I thought that was crazy. And because
he was
because,
like, yeah, it did seem awfully accomplished. I'm like, unlike you, bonehead.
Right. And really? When Xan is selling it, she's like, you know, Heather said if he hasn't figured it out, then he's an idiot. And it's like, yeah. I mean, we know she didn't say that, but it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. Although that was a pretty good ad that it's like, he sort of has to say that he thought something was off now.
Yeah.
And take Xan's side anyway.
Right.
Harry Lennox puts Heather on academic probation or something, but we won't get any closure on that part of this or really anything else because the movie is way more interested in the band's arc and has burned an inexcusable amount of screen time on it to the detriment of denouement. But Heather quits the band. Her songwriting partner, Nick, quits with her because he's in love with her. So he helps her track down Xan's still living mom at the trailer park, where of course she lives, because let's make classist judgments about the mentally ill.
Yeah, as seen also in She Fought Alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stop. Stop doing that.
Yep.
That said, Harriet Sansom Harris, our champion, more than earns her paycheck and everybody else's in a single line delivery amidst a third act exposition dump. You'll absolutely know it when you hear it, but this is still kind of a long clip. Clip 5.
Susie had some unhealthy fixations. She never could accept losing. She'd convince herself that the winners cheated. Cheaters usually got punished. Not by Susie, you understand. They could never prove she had anything to do with what happened to that Armstrong girl.
What happened?
This little ballerina took first place at the LA Junior Miss pageant. Susie came in second. Susie would have won if this little girl hadn't been there. It should have been Susie's finest hour. Instead, it was her biggest heartbreak. A month later, they were both competing for some local commercial. The Armstrong girl slipped and fell down some stairs.
This little ballerina.
Feeling it.
So good. Me too. That's exactly what my notes say. And then Kelly is a ballerina about it. Like, it's so good. And then the rest of it is really good, too, that, like, this character is clearly at war with herself. Like, she yeah. knows that her daughter is violent and extremely unwell. But she also, like, insists that Susie is just misunderstood and hard done by, and they never proved that she actually shoved that Armstrong girl, who apparently fell on her head and grew up to marry Billy. Just kidding. She broke her neck. But yeah, Xan,
is decompensating big time. This should be pretty obvious to Drippy, but it isn't. Could we hear the Tara clip, please?
If she even remotely loves you, she would have done anything. Killed if she had to. That's what I'll do if anybody tries to take you away from me.
I'm not looking for that intense a commitment, Zan.
She didn't ask to put a toothbrush in a cup at your place, Brody. She's
going
to murder someone for you.
And he's like, and his reaction is basically like, that's okay. Like, not, what?
He's just like a little annoyed. And then he keeps looking at her like, I can't even describe the expression. It's like Patrick Muldoon's expressions. And it's like, that could be a lot of things and probably is gas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just thought that was so funny.
This is the good London, but like in his defense, he's given nothing. Like nobody is given anything except the two main characters, really. So in the end, after an inadvertently hilarious montage of her past victims show up all together at the Battle of the Bands to haunt her, Zan predictably self-destructs again during the contest and ends up wailing and rocking in her mother's arms in the wings for a while. Like, call an ambulance and take her outside. What are you doing? Heather and Nick rejoin the band mid-song to save the day to question mark?
Mm-hmm.
Here's something I have no questions about except where to buy it. Shando is wearing a cherry print dress that I must own. If you've watched this movie and you know what I'm talking about, send me options. I have tried mod cloth. They don't have the right thing. Help me. Nick presumably gets it in after the show, but it's hard to say. Zan presumably returns to the same hospital that did such a bang-up job with Roger Azarian and Emily Valentine.
Uh-huh.
We hear the song again, The End. Shando is pretty good in this. She's very believable, actually, as basically the Donna Martin of this scenario.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But with the occasional flashes of Brenda Wash to keep things interesting. In our last clip, she is realizing, as Brenda never quite seemed to in various episodes of 90210, that trying to get on TV may have been a mistake. Clip 6.
No, sororities don't haze anymore. You know, Greeks aren't just about parties and clothes. A lot of us are active in politics and the arts. I'm in Dead Pink. We're competing in a Battle of the Bands at Billboard Live next month. RIKU is sponsoring.
Cut it. Miss, this is a piece about drinking on campus.
Yeah. Of course, I'm against it.
I mean, first there's the, ma'am, this is an Arby's of it all. And
yes.
Then she's like, yeah, of course I'm against it. And then like two scenes later, she's shown drinking again.
Of course.
Oh, God. I mean, there's like a lot of things wrong with this. It's trying to do way too much with the references. But then this band, like, Shando is doing her own singing and she's okay. She's better than you'd think.
Yeah.
You can tell it's her because of the anyway and anymore, but that's fine. She looks great. And there is like a sort of fairy tale short story quality to what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. The build of it is like strangely bad. The song is strangely bad. Jason London is strange and bad, but like it all works together for me. Like it was a perfectly enjoyable, entertaining hour and a half to revisit. The song is stuck in my head. Like it shouldn't work, but it does for me.
Well, I agree overall, but I think the problem, my issue with the credibility of it is that we open, as you said, it at the you know, formative beauty pageant that Susanna and Heather were both in. But what we see is like Heather is kind to Zan.
Yeah.
It's her mother who's the problem. It's Zan's mother who's like pushing her to do this and is like hectoring her and stuff. So like logically, it would have made more sense for Zan to take her revenge out on her mom. But that's not a TV movie. You know, like you have to have two young, hot protagonist, antagonist figures.
Mm-hmm.
Not a girl and her mom. That's Carrie.
Yeah.
Carrie also had problems from her peers as well. But yes, yeah. Like that. But for me, that was the only thing. It was like, Heather's not your enemy. She's nice. Like yeah. When Zan runs off stage crying when she fucks up the song, Heather's the one who was like, you are doing well. You can sing. It's okay. So why she became fixated on her doesn't totally scan for me, other than just like, you know, she took on her mother's neurosis and turned it against everyone that she was ever competing against.
Right. It also sort of makes no sense that Heather would have no, like, I think this is such a conception about popular people that they just don't remember anything from their past.
Yeah.
But like, this is something that you as a little kid would remember. If they kept traveling in like talent show, technically it was a talent show, I think, and not a pageant. So
right, sorry.
Don't add us. They would have kept seeing each other
mm-hmm.
on that circuit. I don't think it's that big. You probably see the same people over and over again. And certainly if they were from the same like part of the world where they were in the same kids pageant, something would have gotten back to Heather about the Armstrong girl. Like, I just, it's weird that she would have been this like walled off from that, because her parents, one of whom is Gregory Itzen, by the way, Mr.
Right.
President, nice to see you. Like, it just doesn't make sense that this wouldn't have been, or that her mom, like Barb, would have called me up and been like, hey, remember Susie Boxer? Yeah, she lost it.
Like, yeah. Unless you just decide like Heather only did one talent show and that was it. Like, you know, we don't know, because we jump straight from that one talent show to her winning the pageant.
Right.
So I guess the suggestion is that she stayed in that world, but like maybe she didn't. Who knows? Like, it's not like they went to the same school necessarily or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could retcon that red dress to be like, well, she's been out of the game for a while and she doesn't know that you're supposed to wear like, you know, pink with a small floral design.
Yes. And a bow on the butt. Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. But the build, I thought, of like all of Zan's nefarious planning mm-hmm. was pretty good.
Yeah.
Like
agreed.
She built it. She schemed that out real nice
mm-hmm.
to fuck over everyone. And it all hung together to the point where you're like, oh my God, Heather might actually lose her scholarship to college because this girl figured out how to make it happen, and it's completely credible.
Yeah.
So.
And it really is like, there were a couple seconds there where I was like, you know, I know it's a TV movie and it's Shannen Doherty, so mm-hmm. it's going to be fine, but like, how?
Yeah.
Is it going to be fine? And when I mentioned up top that we get no closure on that, like, that did sort of bug me. Like, can't we get a pop-up with Harry Lennox?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's like, it's all fine. Your story checks out, but like, what a crafty play on Zan's part to be like, you know, it's the last minute. She's not going to check.
Right. Yeah, it's good. And yeah. I do. The only other issue I have with it is that Shannen Doherty is cast as the nice girl who's nice. You know, like you said, she's basically mm-hmm. the Donna Martin. Mm-hmm. And she's okay. And I also don't think it would have been better if she had played Zan.
Yeah, no, me neither. That's
because I don't think we would buy her like Laura Kingman kind of breakdown at the end. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Correct.
That would have been the problem. Not the scheming. The scheming, we would be there with her. But the part where we have to see her vulnerable, like, that's not something that Shannen Doherty does really well. The anger and the rage. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Jennifer Blank is really good. This is like one of many times that we've talked about her. She was also in Hull High.
Yes, that's
and,
right.
And she's briefly in the Every Dream Has Its Price tag episode of mm-hmm. 90210 from season
one. That's right.
One, but then doesn't, that's it. She doesn't come back.
I'll also note the music is by Buffy's Christoph Beck.
Ah!
And this director, Jack Bender, has... He had 9 episodes of Under the Dome. Tara,
sure.
A little Christmas gift for you. But he also directed Sopranos. He did a few mm-hmm. Felicities. A horrible movie called High School USA, which is just don't do it.
Yeah.
And Child's Play 3.
This was totally fun. This is exactly what you want in a TV movie. And mm-hmm. I had never seen it before, so I was happy to plunge into it for the very first time. So good pick.